Hey friends, Pastor Josh Blevins here, another episode of the Shepherd's Voice podcast. And we're looking always to point people to the clear, true voice of Jesus amid a culture of chaos and confusion. And this week we have a little bit of a different direction we've gone. We are currently in an election season and we're going to be voting for a primary coming up for Missouri governor. And we were blessed today to have one of the candidates, Bill Eigel, here at church with us. And so I wanted to sit down and give him a chance to share his perspective and views on what's going on in our state and in our nation. And so I hope you guys are blessed and enjoy the conversation I got to have with Bill Eigel. Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining me today. And before we even get started on the political discussion, can you tell me a little bit about your faith and how your faith journey has led you to where you're at now in life and how it's inspired your like political ambitions or desires or involvement?
You bet. Well, I'm a Christian. I believe that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior and have been my entire life. I think the time where I really became close to a relationship with the Lord was back actually when I was in the military. I served in the Air Force for 8 years. And in 2004, I was deployed overseas to a country very far from here. It was a former Soviet country as part of the global war on terror. And there's something about being so far from home that makes you look for an anchor and all that. And for me, it was a relationship that I built with the Lord and have carried with me ever since. And I tell you, one of the biggest things that the Lord has given me is being at peace and understanding that He's got a plan for everything. And it was like an epiphany moment for me, being in a faraway place that nothing's recognizable, that He does have a plan. And even though we don't understand it on any given day, it's an incredible plan, and we don't have to be afraid.
Yeah. And does that inspire the policies you stand for, the fights you take on the front lines?
Absolutely. I believe that all of our rights are given to us by the Lord, and I believe that we are, as elected leaders, put in these positions to protect those rights. And if you look at our society today, some of the biggest fights that we are struggling in our political realm are fights that I think the Lord is calling us to be a part of: the pro-life movement and defending unborn children from the scourge of abortion, protecting our children and protecting our families from this transgender ideology that is directly, physically trying to destroy our children. These are righteous fights where it is a struggle of good between evil. And I see the Lord as the ultimate moral authority. And He teaches us, and I believe He blesses those that are going to be on the right side of these struggles.
Yeah. Before we even go any further, I noticed that you were at the Republican National Convention here recently, and we are literally sitting here together days out from this assassination attempt on President Trump's life, and we saw a whole nation be rattled. This is shaken up a lot of people. There's a lot of political speak going on about the implications of this. I mean, what are your thoughts about how this affects you personally, and what does it mean for our nation? How should we be looking at this moving forward, given this heinous evil event that took place at that rally?
So when I first heard about the incident, I was on my way from Kirksville, Missouri to Mexico, Missouri. And of course, I think like a lot of Americans, my initial reaction was shock to this. But then as we got a chance to watch some of the videos and the recordings of the events unfold in Pennsylvania, I felt a sense of pride when I saw President Trump stand up and really kind of raise his hand, raise his fist, really not just in defiance of the shooter, but in defiance of a status quo in Washington, D.C., that's been trying to attack him for more than a decade. And so and the president said this himself, it is only by the grace of God that he is still here with us. And I feel like how close we came to an unthinkable tragedy. It was already a tragedy in the idea that someone was killed, several individuals were hurt, but we could have had a moment there that truly tore our country to pieces if that bullet had been even a couple inches one way or the other. So that really It's another example of just how awesome God's plan is, because clearly it wasn't part of the plan that those tragedies were going to unfold to that level. So I'm thankful for that. And I was in Milwaukee this week. There was a tremendous amount of energy amongst the Republican delegates on the convention floor. And I take from that that the Republican Party at the national level is united, maybe more so than it's been in a long time. And they're united around these ideas that we have as Republicans, that even though that's a political party, a private organizations, they're the same beliefs that I hold most dear in my Christian heart. This idea that, like I said, we're going to be the pro-life champions protecting the unborn. We're going to be the protectors in our communities, the champions of rights. And really, the implications of the assassination attempt is a reminder that we're not doing a good enough job to protect one another. And I feel like the traditional American Christian family is under more threat and under more attack today than it's ever been before. So we need leaders in our country at the national level, like President Trump, or at the state level, where we're going to have a big election coming up in a few weeks, to really identify who our champions and protectors going to be.
Yeah, that's great. And you have a lot of line items here that you're fighting for. And I think a lot of people are used to sometimes politicians coming with ambitious visions. What do you think uniquely qualifies you in this race to be a person who can impact actual change in Missouri and with fellow legislators? What leadership do you believe that you bring to the table that's going to allow you to fulfill the promises that you are seeking?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, unlike many of, unfortunately, my colleagues down in Jefferson City, I have an understanding of what the proper role of government actually is, that it's to protect our rights. It's not to do anything beyond protecting our rights. It's not to give us stuff. It's not to pay for our things. It's not to make our decisions. It's to protect our rights, a very narrow, limited scope envisioned by the founding fathers to protect those rights that are granted to us by God. And more than that, I have an inherent willingness to do that, which I think many politicians struggle with, which is confront the status quo. Donald Trump calls it the swamp. Confront the status quo and tell them that which they don't hear enough. No. I mean, we've seen government grow to a size that we've never had before in this country. And all of that government is precisely what leads to not just the attacks on our families directly, but the COVID environment that shut down businesses, that prevented individuals from worshiping in their churches, that was requiring individuals to become part of a medical experiment that they didn't want to be a part of. And so this is going to take righteous courage, I think, when we're going to go after some of the most evil and difficult swamp areas or special interest areas that don't care about everyday folks here in the state of Missouri. We've got to be bold about that.
Yeah. And I think most everyday folks you talk to in Missouri assume, you know, well, we have a conservative state, you know, we're going to maintain that conservative nature within our state. But I've noticed, I mean, even as a pastor, the militancy of the left is becoming so much more forceful, threatening. I'm currently undergoing a lawsuit simply from speaking up against the LGBTQ ideologies being propagated through libraries and schools. How important is it that we have strong conservative leadership, even in our state, I mean, for the next season coming up?
Very important. In fact, you mentioned the pornography that's gotten into our schools. You know, also probably familiar with these drag queen shows that are going on around the state that children are being invited into. It's so important to have conservative leaders that are going to confront these things, because it's already against state law for those things to be occurring. It's already against state law for pornographic material to be inside our libraries, because it's against state law to expose children to this stuff. It's already against the law for children to be led into adult performances, these drag queen shows. It's already against the law. We don't have a lack of laws that are specifying that these are bad things. We have a lack of leadership, whether it's prosecutors at the local level, whether it's the governor in Jefferson City that could do something to stop this. When I'm the governor of this state, I'm not going to be looking to ask more questions are compromised with the militant left that you just talk about. The next time we have a drag queen show that a child is led into, understanding that that's breaking in the law, my intention is to invite in the highway patrol, and we're going to start arresting people and punishing individuals who are exposing our children to this nonsense. So that kind of bold statement is not going to make me more popular in the hallways of Jefferson City, but it's what's demanded, I think, by the families across this state.
You've spoken strongly about maintaining Missouri as a right-to-life state, protecting the life of the unborn. That status is currently under attack, even in our own state, by people who want to bring abortion rights back into our state. What kind of things need to be done to ensure that we protect the life of the unborn here?
Well, as you know, in November, we're going to have to make a decision as a state of whether or not we want to remain one of the pro-life leaders in these United States, or if we want to roll back 20 years of pro-life progress and allow abortion to be enshrined into the Missouri Constitution. This came about because of a lack of leadership in Jefferson City that failed to pass initiative petition reform that would have protected our Constitution from the abortionists who are trying to expand the culture of death. So what we need, and there's a lot of focus, and I understand why there's a lot of focus on this primary that's going to occur on August 6th, but it's very important to remember that on August 7th, between August 7th and the general election in November, we need to unite the Republican Party, because the Republican Party is putting together the coalition that's going to turn these abortionists back from the ballot. Now, the abortionists have had some success in other states getting abortion enshrined into those constitutions. So there's a real opportunity here for the nominee of the Republican Party for governor to not only unite Republicans across this state under the idea that we are a big pro-life red state and we're going to defeat these abortionists, and there's an opportunity for Missouri on the national stage to be the first state in the union to defeat the abortionists at the ballot box. I'm excited about that. Yes. And all of my energy after August 6th is going to go into defeating the abortionists. This is a battle that we could win because Missouri's been sending pro-life supermajorities of Republicans to Jefferson City for years. This is the next natural step that we can honor God and protect families in the state of Missouri.
That's wonderful. Let's switch gears for a moment. You have a strong stance that you've verbalized. I know we've talked about it a little bit over lunch once, that you want to really prevent the foreign purchase of farmland in this agricultural center of the United States and in Missouri. That seems to be happening in multiple states, where we see these this buyout of land from Americans, from foreign entities. Can you speak briefly about why that's so important to you, and how you will navigate forward in seeing that land is protected for American use?
Absolutely. You know, it's always a bad idea to lose control of your food supply, the farmland that we're using to grow food that we feed our communities from. And yet, before 2013 in the state of Missouri, it was actually against the law for foreign countries to come in and buy farmland in the state for precisely that reason. It's a national security issue. We don't want, whether it's our adversaries or any other foreign country, taking control of our food supply. But due to a law that was passed in 2013, more than 270,000 acres of Missouri farmland is now eligible to be bought by foreign entities, and China has been one of the biggest buyers of that land. So I've been very clear. I want to make sure that we have a Missouri that is owned by Missourians, or at least Americans. And what we're going to do is we're going to do two things. One, we're going to make it illegal for foreign entities to buy any of our land moving forward. But more importantly, for the land that we've already lost, we're going to pass a constitutional amendment that I believe with certainty is going to be approved by the people of the state, that will require foreign owners to divest themselves or sell back the land to American hands within 2 years. So Missouri is going to be owned by Missourians, or at least Americans.
Yeah. Wow. Attached to that, you have talked a lot about, certain taxes that we've got, the personal property tax. I know that there might be some voices saying, well, that's a nice thought, but what about our families and the social programs and homelessness and addiction and things that are funded? What is your strategy on the taxation of Missourians?
Yeah. So I've been pretty upfront that my economic plan includes eliminating personal property tax and eliminating income taxes in the state. And, you know, there is a natural concern that we still want to be able to fund those local services that most every rational person believes that we ought to have, like police or firefighters or well-funded schools. But we're seeing in states that are growing, not named Missouri, Texas, Tennessee, Florida, they provide all those services without having income taxes and without having personal property taxes. In Missouri, we've grown the size of our government. We've doubled the size of our government just in the past 5 years. In fact, spending in Jefferson City has increased by $25 billion a year just in the past 5 years. Well, the value of every dollar we take in personal property tax is only $1.7 billion. So what we need is a fiscal conservative that's going to take a chainsaw to that budget. I use that term lightly, a chainsaw to that budget in Jefferson City, and we'll be able to use the surpluses that we generate in our capital to keep the local areas whole when they're no longer getting personal property tax. I would just say that none of the problems in this state have anything to do with government not getting enough of our cash. In fact, right now, we're spending twice per person in the state of Missouri for police and firefighter and all those other necessary services that states like Florida and Texas and Tennessee are paying per person. So we've got a lot of waste in government. I think with the right person that's willing to confront the special interests that don't want to let that money go, we can make a lot of progress on lowering the tax burden.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed also just in discussion with people here in St. Joseph, on another level, people inside our church or inside our faith community, outside the faith community, there seems to be a growing concern over, you know, increasing crime, drug trafficking, things that are really threatening the health and the prosperity of families that a lot of people are concerned are going undealt with within local communities. Is there anything from your seat, that the governor's seat, that could be done to help ensure that Missouri is a safe place for families?
Yes, absolutely. We talk about, you're specifically mentioning the crime in Kansas City and the crime in St. Louis City. These areas have seen enormous increases in criminal activity because you have soft-on-crime regimes at the local level that really just don't want to put bad guys in jail and hold them accountable. What the governor can do, and I've made a commitment to do this on my first day as the chief executive, is we're going to activate and put law enforcement, specifically the highway patrol, we're going to triple their presence on the highways in and out of those cities that are being used as the primary conduits for criminals to get out to the suburban and the rural areas. So that's a short-term solution that we can do. In fact, Governor Greitens did this back in 2017. They were arresting thousands of individuals. But when Mike Parson came into the governor's seat, he turned that program off, and he's kind of turned a blind eye to the criminal activity that's going on there, in spite of the fact that we have so many resources that we could bring to bear for additional law enforcement or for other programs. And other initiatives like having the state take control of some of these local functions, whether it's the St. Louis Police Department that could be controlled by the state so that we ensure that they get enough resources that they need, or it's taking over some of the responsibilities of the prosecutors in these urban areas that don't like putting bad guys in jail. So this is been getting worse because we've had a chief executive that hasn't engaged on this. We're going to be aggressive about making sure that all of our communities are safe, and certainly we have the resources to do so.
Yeah. Switching gears again, I lived in California for most of my life, and the recent insanity of some of the bills that their government is passing for their citizens is almost jaw-dropping, especially surrounding the areas of parental rights, sex education in classrooms, gender reassignment surgeries for kids. All of these things are really embracing this agenda that's driving towards our children. What role does the state have to make sure that schools are safe environments where people are getting math, arithmetic, history, English, and not getting indoctrinated by sexualized ideas that are confusing our society?
Yeah, none of these sexualized materials or ideologies should be anywhere near any of our public schools. And I think that we stand with a vast majority of Missourians that agree with that assessment. And actually, you mentioned California, which you're right, is rolling back parental rights, parental notification rights. In fact, children are allowed to begin working and making decisions about their health with a school district, and a parent may not even be notified now under California law. That's the destruction of our kids that's going on right there. And compare California to a different state, the state of Louisiana. Mm. On the other end of the spectrum, the state of Louisiana just passed a law that was signed by their governor that's going to put the Ten Commandments back into every single classroom of every public school in the state. You have two wildly different visions of America going on here, even amongst California and Louisiana, two states. I want to see Missouri a heck of a lot closer to the Louisiana version, because the biggest threat, the biggest existential threat, I believe, whereas my Democratic neighbors are saying it has to do with climate change and these other manufactured problems, I think it has to do with the loss of God in our society, the loss of the Lord in our public spaces, the fact that we have allowed an imperfect society to push the Lord out of those spaces, and we've invited in some of the worst impulses of the human mind and of the enemy himself to determine how we're going to conduct ourselves in our public spaces. No wonder we've seen such a degradation of the American traditional family over the past 30 or 40 years. So what can a governor do to turn that back? Well, what we're seeing governors already do in other big red states, whether it's Louisiana or it's Florida or it's Texas, understand that the proper role of government is to protect our rights. Protecting our rights includes the right to life. It includes our right to property and our right to make our own decisions and live our own lives. We have gotten so far from that that, of course, we've invited these terrible things into happen. You know, I get a lot of questions from our friends on the left that ask if we should be curtailing our rights, like, for the example, the Second Amendment, and they want to know if more gun control would help solve the crime crisis in our cities. But you know what? You know, folks in our cities have the same access to firearms that folks in our suburban and rural areas have, and yet we don't see the degradation or the criminal activity in those rural and suburban areas. And the reason is the cities now, with these leftist regimes that don't value life, that don't value the integrity, the physical integrity of a child, and have implemented policies to actually destroy those things, well, of course they're going to be susceptible to the same idea that doesn't value life in the first place, which of course leads to violent crime, where folks just don't recognize the sanctity of life of their neighbor, much less an unborn child. So I think that being the moral center of, and by the way, folks that say we don't want morals in our government, just so that we're clear, all law is moral.
Yes.
Every law that's
just
been
who's morals.
That's right. Every law that's ever been created is based on a moral code from somewhere. Yeah. I happen to be, maybe I'm old-fashioned, I happen to be a belief that the Christian values that America was founded on is the moral code that should be guiding our actions. So we can do a lot better job protecting our rights down in Jefferson City, and I think that's a big part of the message of my candidacy.
Yeah. You know, you speak pretty boldly about the principles found in the scripture, about the moral compass that the Word of God provides, Ten Commandments, inviting the Lord back into our public spaces. There's been this phrase, you know, separation of church and state seemed to be a favorite phrase among the left. I did a sermon series once on looking at the history of how we came to allow the government to push out the church's voice and involvement from political areas and arenas. As a pastor, I'd love to hear your take on how the church and the state should be or could be partnering together for the betterment of our community, and what role the church has to be involved.
Well, I tell you, first of all, for those folks, and they are seem to be mainly on the left that talk about the separation of church and state. As the governor of this state, I know of no way that I'm going to be separated from my relationship from the Lord. And every decision that I make, every policy that I support is based on my desire to honor him and the blessings that he has put on us. So if you're hoping that there's going to be a world in which God doesn't exist in those public spaces, I'm probably not the right guy that you should consider for your vote. Now, I think that the role for the church is the strength for America, because the strength of America, it was once said, was not found in her military arms, but found in the righteousness of her pulpits, the righteousness of the moral fabric that has united Americans for more than 200 years. The churches have led so many efforts, and I've seen, unfortunately, over the past 30 or 40 years, I'm sure you've seen this as well, churches in America withdrawing from the public conversations precisely when we need them the most, precisely when we need to be them to be calling out the moral failings of allowing a medical industry to go after our children, the moral failings of allowing women to be harmed by the scourge of abortion. I mean, we talk about the sanctity of life, but what about the harm abortion is doing to the women that are undergoing these procedures? I mean, these women who have undergone procedures are three times more likely to have a suicide, are three times more likely to have mental health issues, and we're allowing this to go on. So the righteousness, the moral standing to say that these things are indeed wrong and we should oppose them in all their forms, these are conversations, these are struggles that can be led from the pulpit, from our churches. We saw that in your sermons today, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, great. Well, we're just weeks out from our Missouri primary. Any final thoughts, words to the audience that might be listening, considering maybe the undecided out there that's saying, you know, I'm really praying through or examining who should get my vote and why should I vote for Bill Igel?
I'm going to be the defender of rights. I've made a habit over the past 8 years of being the one that makes that status quo uncomfortable, and I'm excited about the future that we're talking about. But if I had to leave any of your listeners with a final thought, more than just to the context of a campaign, I heard this message this morning, and I think about this a lot. Don't be afraid. You know, there is a status quo. Donald Trump, of course, calls it the swamp down in Jefferson City that doesn't care about us. And they're desperate to tell you that you have to vote for someone in particular, or they're putting out lies about different candidates. Don't be afraid of all the messaging that you're going to hear over the next 17 days. In your heart, I believe that God's got a plan for each of us. No matter what happens on election day, I believe that we're still being called to be a part of God's plan, and there's an opportunity for Missouri to be a leader in these United States. And if we can find our ways to not be afraid of all the message and negative attacks that typically seem to go on in the campaign season, then we're going to glorify Him with the decisions and the votes that we cast.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you being here and the things that you've done, the lines that you've towed, and the things you fought for in our state. And so really appreciate you being here today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, hey, everybody. Thank you again for joining me on this episode. It means a lot that you take the time to engage in these conversations with us. And if you enjoyed this or you benefited from it, I would just encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, our podcast channel, or just share the link with a friend. Together, we can continue to get the Word of God out into our culture and bring clarity in the midst of chaos and all the confusion going on around us. So God bless you guys. Until next time. See you then.